This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. News reports this week celebrated a vote held in Puerto Rico, a colony of the U.S., as being overwhelmingly in favor of statehood. The idea of Puerto Rico as the U.S.'s 51st state is a seductive one. But what didn't make the headlines was that a population that is generally counted on for high voter turnout boycotted the election in large numbers. Only 23% of the island's residents voted. Of that minority, 97% chose statehood. The vote was non-binding, and Puerto Rico's pro-statehood governor, Ricardo Rossselli, who backed the election, plans to take the results to the U.S. Congress, where he faces an uphill battle. Puerto Ricans also voted on the question of statehood in 1998 and 2012. The American territory's economy is in shambles, a fact that affected the dynamic of this latest election. Many Puerto Ricans favor complete independence from the U.S. over statehood. One of them is my guest, Rosa Clemente. She's a community organizer, active with Black Lives Matter, a freelance journalist. She was the 2008 Green Party vice presidential candidate, currently a doctoral candidate in the W.E.B. Du Bois Department of Afro-American Studies at University of Massachusetts Amherst. She's also a news correspondent for Rising Up with Sonali. Welcome to the program, Rosa.
Thank you for having me, Sonali.
So let's try to make sense of these numbers. Only 23% of people showed up to this vote. Normally, people show up in much higher numbers than in the mainland to vote in U.S. elections, something like 70 to 80%. How do you explain this dramatic difference in numbers?
Well, yeah, in Puerto Rico, the voter turnout rate for all elections is usually, as you said, 70 to 85%. We have one of the highest voter turnout rates in the world. So this non-binding referendum was pushed by Governor Jose Jo, who comes from a long line of Republican right-wing political family. His father was the governor about 10, 12 years ago. And this is not something that the people wanted, which is why the majority of the people in Puerto Rico boycotted the election, which I think that's something strange for people in the United States to hear. But actually, that to me is a high level sophistication and political power, because you're making the choice not to participate in this farce, which is what it was. Puerto Rico is in the most severe economic crisis that it has ever been in. Puerto Rico internationally is being called the Greece of the Caribbean. That is how bad the economic crisis is. And this governor and his statehood supporters, some of them complete right-wing people, the ones that started a smear campaign against Oscar Lopez Rivera, funded by Breitbart. And I want to break that down because I think it's important for people to know who is funding this push for statehood, who is funding this right-wing kind of politic. And we can see some DC think tanks that fund this part of the Puerto Rican government. They spent over $11 million to push for statehood. $11 million could have saved a number of schools. By the time school starts this fall, 189 public schools will be shuttered. So it also shows that, right, only 23% of eligible voters voted. Those were all the ones that won statehood. So that means that 77% of voters do not want statehood.
Now, Rosa, I understand that there were, just let's talk about what the options were on the ballot. I understand one option, of course, was statehood. One option was just remaining U.S. territory. Wasn't there also an option to pick independence?
Yeah, I mean, there's always an option, but it's also the phrasing of how it is. I didn't actually see the actual ballot yet. But again, the other parties chose to boycott, right? This again, a non-binding referendum. These are non-binding. Their exercises at this point of futility, Because the only thing that Puerto Ricans should be talking about, and particularly what younger people are talking about, is how now do we go through a process of decolonization and immediate independence for our island.
So
I'm at the point where I'm not even going to, not that this is what we're doing on this show, but in other circles, debate whether Puerto Rico should be free, an independent nation that self-determines its own fate, or be a state. We will never be a state. It doesn't matter how many stakeholders, how many plebiscites, how much money. Puerto Rico will never be a state of the United, it will never be part of the United States like that.
Now, so you're saying that rather than show up and vote for independence, the pro-independence Puerto Ricans didn't want to legitimize the vote because they thought the whole process was a sham.
Well, it is a sham. Again, it's non-binding. It means nothing because we're a colony. So even the person that represents us in DC is called a shadow representative. That person is only allowed to be inside the Congress when debates are happening. He's allowed to partake in some debates, but when a vote happens, he is asked to leave. So every time a vote comes on the floor for anything, he's not allowed to vote. So again, these are exercises now in futility. They don't mean anything. We have to go through a decolonization process backed by the United Nations. Then we have to go about then what is our process for beginning to ask the US government for reparations so that we can pull ourselves up out of the economic crisis that we're in that is being caused by United States colonialism and imperialism.
Now, there was another, there have been a couple of elections similar to this one. I'm not sure if they were the same, but certainly similar. In 1998, there was a vote over statehood. In 2012, there was another vote. In 2012,
All non-binding.
61%, I understand, voted for statehood. How do you explain the difference between what happened this week and when what's happened in previous votes?
Well, look, the statehooders, like I said, are getting a lot of money, especially from right-wing groups, which is very strange to me because I don't see a lot of like white conservatives wanting to have three now potential million people vote Democratic. I think it's more about extracting all the resources from Puerto Rico and using the island for play and using it also for its military outpost, as it is part of the US Southern Command. And the island itself is very significant militarily to the United States. The way I explain these referendums is, if people don't understand the history of the Independence Party, if they don't understand from the beginning when we've been fighting for independence, the repression from the Spanish colonial government, the repression from the United States, right? Whether it was straight massacring independence leaders as they were marching peacefully, whether it was torturing and imprisoning Albizu Campos, whether it was sterilizing one third of the women on the island so Johnson and Johnson could test birth control, or whether it's having our freedom fighters charged with seditious conspiracy, which then made them political prisoners. Some spent over 27 years in jail, and now Oscar Lopez spent 37 years in jail for being convicted of seditious conspiracy. This charge has only ever been used against Puerto Ricans who are fighting for independence. So I think we have to contextualize the history of the repressive nature of the US government every time we try to get our independence. And then that in itself, I think, instills some fear, especially on those that live on the island, because they've seen what has happened to the Independence Party. They've also seen a campaign that has always smeared those that are independistas, from Albizu Campos to Lolita Lebron to right now to Oscar Lopez Rivera.
And I want to ask you about Rivera in just a moment, but just also a note to our audience that for a really great history lesson from my guest Rosa Clemente, she recently appeared on a new CNN show, United Shades of America, hosted by W. Kamau Bell. And that history lesson, Rosa, that that you gave on Puerto Rico and its, you know, true origins as a U.S. territory, how that all happened, I thought is something that you don't very often see in the mainstream media. I'm wondering if you've had a good response to that episode airing.
Yeah, I mean, first, I'm so grateful for Kamau Bell and Donnie Jackson, the other executive producer, for having a full episode on Puerto Rico. So many times in the dialogue in the United States, especially when it's about Latinx people in general or quote Hispanic people, Puerto Ricans are being left out of all these conversations. And I often say it's because we are American citizens who are treated as second-class citizens, and the United States is ashamed of how it's treated us. Therefore, we're not part of a lot of discourses. Geopolitically, also, Puerto Rico does not fit into Latin American politics because we're a U.S. colony and not an independent nation. So I was super just happy when Kamau hit me up and said, "We're doing this whole episode." And I said, "Well, you have to contextualize this. It can't be pro-statehood and it can't be just about dancing in our music." And I think for a 1 hour mainstream show on CNN, they did a good job. And our goal too, as particularly Puerto Ricans that have this information and knowledge or have been raised up in movement, is we can't keep preaching to the choir. We have to literally, start from the beginning of our history with our own young and young old Puerto Ricans that have been put under the mindset of colonization and actually decolonize the mind. And I hope that this episode is just a way, especially a teaching tool, that folks can sit down with their family and then have numerous debates and discussions around that.
Let's talk about Oscar Lopez Rivera, who was essentially freed through an action taken by Barack Obama alongside the commuting of Chelsea Manning's sentence as well. Chelsea Manning got a lot more attention than Oscar Lopez Rivera, but Rivera spent a lot longer in prison over this part of American history that most mainstream Americans don't know about, or most people consuming mainstream media don't know about. Have you had the chance to meet him personally since he's been freed?
Yes, I have. So Oscar is known as the Mandela of the Americas. He was in prison for 37 years. When Bill Clinton commuted the sentences of other political prisoners, he could have came out, and he chose not to, because his belief, as he has said, is that you leave no comrade behind. And the people that he stayed behind have already been released. So when Barack Obama did the right thing, and I think it's important for us as movement organizers, left progressives, to say you did the right thing, but it was a movement that freed Oscar. It was the 35 Mujeres for Oscar, Pro Libertad, and so many other people coming together saying Oscar must be free. From the moment he's been released, it's not only been mainstream media that has not been giving him his proper due and contextualization. It's also been a lot of so-called progressive people that are not lifting Oscar up as what he is, a freedom fighter who was in jail 12 years in solitary confinement. And I got to meet him Thursday, this past Thursday, last week, excuse me, in New York. And I was with my daughter. And when he came in, I mean, the energy and the everything in that room was just pure revolutionary love. But when I got to hug him and just say thank you, and he energy and spirit is just love. I said to him, "I don't understand how you're not mad." And he's like, "As revolutionaries, we have to be about love, you know." And to have my daughter meet him and him just caress her face and then have to explain to my daughter why the newspapers in New York are calling him a terrorist, why people are pulling out of the Puerto Rican Day Parade, one of the largest parades in the country, over Oscar. I had to explain to my daughter, and this is how I explain it to people: Oscar's our hero. We don't let a corporation, mainstream media, so-called liberals dictate who we know Oscar to be. Oscar was in jail when my daughter was born. Oscar was in jail since I was 10 years old, and I'm 46. So I was explaining to her, when they call him a terrorist, it's because he's a freedom fighter and his principles, he stayed with them even when it could have been convenient for him to get out. And that was in 1999 when he could get out. He spent 18 more years, right? So I think that's how we have to see it. And in fact, next week on June 21st at Springfield College in Springfield, Mass, I am gonna have the honor of introducing and moderating an event in Springfield, Mass with Oscar Lopez Rivera and his daughter. And it is literally the best honor that I've ever received in my entire life. And we have to claim this victory. And Oscar will be living in Puerto Rico. And he said he will be on the ground with the students and the young people there fighting until Puerto Rico is free. And he has given us all the energy we need to reinvigorate the Independista movement that we need here and on the islands.
And how has he viewed this vote that just happened? I imagine that his opinion is similar to yours.
Yeah, I mean, he said it on Thursday at Hostos. He said, this is to throw people off. This is for these statehooders to push an agenda because they want an island that they could keep extracting from. And that what we do is we keep our eyes on the prize. And in fact, something very important that he said, and he said it on Democracy Now!, is he said, we have to say, just like we said that slavery was a crime against humanity, colonialism is a crime against humanity. And colonialism is living and breathing. So it's not only a crime against humanity, it's a specific crime against the Puerto Rican people and its children and our children. And that's why, for me personally, I'm of the politic now that now not only do we say and push for that, we also begin to figure out a way how we demand reparations from the United States government for over 17 years of colonialism and the United States extracting everything from our island, including people. And we need to demand reparations for Puerto Rico.
So, Rosa, let's talk about the current economic crisis, because that is a huge issue. As you mentioned, the election cost upwards of more than $10 million, money that could have actually been spent on the things that Puerto Rico desperately needs. There is also a stream of Puerto Ricans leaving the island to come to the mainland because there are so few opportunities left there. And who is responsible for this? Do you see the current economic crisis as part of the trajectory of American colonialism and resource extraction?
I mean, that's what you just said. That is why we're in the economic crisis we're in. Also, there has been a lot of political corruption, and most of it coming from those that are Republican governors and those that are supposed to be representing the people of Puerto Rico. Right now, the situation is dire in Puerto Rico. We're at the point where garbage is not being picked up. We're at the point where hospitals have been closed. Like I said, 189 schools are being shuttered. The University of Puerto Rico system, the students were on strike for over 66 days. They just called it off about a week ago, probably to regroup and get it to the next level, the movement to the next level. The chancellor of Puerto Rico has said she's going to increase tuition again. And over 400,000 people have left the island in the last 10 years, mostly young, professional, lawyers, doctors. Many of them reside now in Orlando. Orlando is now the heart of the Puerto Rican diaspora. There will be more Puerto Ricans in Orlando or in parts of Florida in the next 5 to 10 years that will be in New York and Chicago. And that, you know, it's an easy migration from obviously Puerto Rico to Florida, many more opportunities. We could even look at the Pulse nightclub shooting that yesterday was a year since that happened. And many of those that were killed were Puerto Rican LGBTQ folks. So that has been happening and will continue to happen. What happened to Puerto Rico is that this, Oscar said this too, it could very well be that in the next decade, there will be no Puerto Ricans in Puerto Rico.
Wow, that's amazing. There's been a lot of talk about appealing to the US Congress for help. Donald Trump has dismissed the idea of helping Puerto Rico as a quote bailout. He might not say the same thing for banks, but what do you think? I mean, should Puerto Rico turn to Congress for help?
No, I mean I mean we should be able to, but that's not gonna happen. So what we need to do is, like Malcolm said, take this to the United Nations. We gotta go through a decolonization process. We have to claim colonialism as a crime against humanity. We have to demand reparations. I don't think these are exercises in futility. Will they take long? Most likely. Will it have to be a unified struggle of Puerto Ricans on the island and in the diaspora? Of course. But from what I've seen on the ground last year to now, young people are very clear that they want self-determination and independence. And they're the ones leading a lot of the movement on the ground. The Independence Party needs a resurgence. It needs young blood in it, and it's gonna get it. And what is also happening is in here in the United States, from groups like Defend Puerto Rico, a kind of resurgence of even talking about Puerto Rico, even talking about our history, our independence, and what we fight for. And in fact, this week at the Allied Media Conference that's taking place in Detroit this weekend, there's going to be a solidarity exchange with Puerto Ricans from the island who will be meeting with folks from Detroit and gathering around ideas of how Detroit is beginning to come up out of this bankruptcy, fiscal control board, what young people are doing in Detroit by starting new cooperative economics, starting cooperative businesses, taking over abandoned property. And I think that's exactly what needs to happen. And I see the young people in Puerto Rico turning not towards capitalism, of course, but turning towards a model of cooperative economics. And what does it mean to have land and water and food where everybody can eat, drink, and live? And I'm more excited than I've ever been, except when we see the freedom of our political prisoners and freedom fighters about where Puerto Rico can go.
Well, Rosa, where can people find out more about the work that you do, follow your appearances, etc.?
Yeah, they can go to my website, rosaclemente.net. You can text me, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat. I'm on everything, Twitter, all under Rosa Clemente. And I just encourage, especially those that are listening to the US, to go to Defend Puerto Rico, buy a t-shirt, give some money, see the multimedia project and work that's happening, and check out the Allied Media Conference. A lot of it is going to be streaming live. And just be very purposeful in your work and being intersectional and making that intersection of Puerto Rico and its people and politics part of the work that we do in the movement.
We'll post those links from our website later today. Rosa, as always, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Sonali. Take care.
Rosa Clemente is a community organizer active with Black Lives Matter. She's a freelance journalist. She was the 2008 Green Party vice presidential candidate, currently a doctoral candidate in the W.E.B. Du Bois Department of Afro-American Studies at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, and she's one of our news correspondents. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Find us also on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.